Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello and welcome back to MASHcast, the show that analyzes and celebrates episode by episode the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which aired on CBS from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Fire & Water Podcast Network, I'm your host, General Robert Iron Guts Kelly. And joining us this week in the VIP tent is General Corey Drew. Hey, Corey, welcome back.
Hey, thank you. Another promotion. I love it.
Every time somebody comes on the show, they get a promotion. Now, you have not been on the show since season 5, sir.
So
a lot has happened in both the show and in your life, because the last time you were on, you were not a married man, you were not a father, and now you were both of those things. So congratulations.
That's right. Wow. I mean, a lot can happen when you're on R&R in Seoul, Korea for 3.5 years.
You made the most of it, Marant. So before we get into the first episode of season 8, because, of course, this is the season premiere of both MASH and MASHcast, I want to ask you a little bit, what is your general, because we haven't had a chance to talk to you about it, what is your general feeling as a MASH fan about the back half of MASH? Because, I mean, now the show looks a little different. It's being they warmed up the color palette, so it doesn't have that kind of washed out look that it had in the first 6 seasons. And of course, we've got Major Winchester now, not Frank Burns, and we are effectively radarless. He will be in little bits and pieces, and then he'll disappear pretty soon into season. But he's basically not on the show anymore. So there's been a lot of changes. So as a fan of the show, where are you? And of course, the show's also become a little more dramatic in these later seasons. So how do you feel about it as a fan?
It's interesting because these are the episodes I remember watching in first run, right? Like most of my MASH television was watched in rerun, right? Almost all of it, right? But the later, like 79, 80, 81, 82, and 83, I was allowed to stay up at least for some of those episodes, right? Like, and so my first awareness of MASH had all of those characters. Major Winchester and Klinger played a bigger role, and you know, there wasn't a radar. And then in reruns, not that long after, I started to watch those earlier episodes. So, like, I think, I don't know if this is unique to me, I think the earlier episodes, the Frank Burns era, early parts of the Winchester era, were probably better than the back end of things. But I think I like the ones on the back end of things more, in terms of just sort of giving you that, you know, that sort of nostalgic warm feeling. And also, like, the jokes, I think, in the later episodes, and especially in this one, are just so, just, you know, it's like a patter song. It's just like boom, 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 boom. It's just like you know, the jokes are just rapid fire, or it's a terrifying episode and there's bombs going off around everyone.
Right.
It's really not much in the middle. I think that, you know, you get more bang for your buck in the joke department in the later seasons. And they're all very sort of classical jokes, like very punchline setup, you know, wordplay. And that's kind of my thing. Like, one of my favorite shows ever is Letterkenny. I don't know if you've seen it, but
I've heard of it, but I've never seen it.
That show is built on wordplay. Like 90% of that is just wordplay jokes, kind of like Arrested Development was a little bit.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, in that sort of same vein. And I really like that. And I suspect that I really like that because I grew up watching these episodes of MASH.
Gotcha. That makes sense. I'm the same way. I caught the show as it aired new during those seasons you just mentioned. And then I went back and watched the reruns and you're like, oh, this show looks different. Who are these people? You know, so yeah. And then in terms of the jokes, it's sort of funny. Now, maybe it's because I haven't had to like review a MASH episode in a couple of months because this is the first one of the new season. But like, I didn't remember this one as being there's no drama really much to this one. It's right. Mostly one of their sillier ones, but that's okay. I didn't remember it being like one of their funniest ones or something. And then I rewatch it. I'm like, this is really funny. Like, I had a
It's
lot of
really
jokes. It's
funny.
really funny. And I was like, and again, it was maybe it was because it was sort of just absence makes the heart grow fonder, or I'm just appreciating it in a different way. Because as I'm like making notes for this episode, I was like, that's a funny line. That's a funny line. That's a funny line. You know, I had like a lot to pick from. So yeah, it was like, oh, this is really funny.
And like listening to it, and like I have a note on my notes, and it just says, "My God, the jokes!" Exclamation mark. It's just it relentless. Like every scene is just like it's like a patter song. It's just boom, 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 boom. Joke, 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 joke. And if some of them don't even have much of a setup, it's just here's a funny thing, you know? And some of them are set up really, really well. One of my favorite jokes is in this episode, I think is set up really well. I think it's, you know, it just is really, really, really funny. And you know, maybe not the same kind of humor, right? As some of, like, I feel like the humor in those earlier episodes especially was a lot more sardonic, a lot more cutting, a lot more sort of there to make a point. I think the point of the jokes in this episode, I think they even say it at one point, was that, you know, the army always makes the right decision. You know what I mean? Like, I think that was the satire of this episode. But they put, like, the joke writers, they must have just opened up their box of 3x5 cards and like, okay, let's just go, let's go, let's do 6 inches of 3x5 cards worth of jokes. You know, it's crazy.
One of the things that I mean, at the end of every episode, everyone knows at this point, I run a little line from the show. It's either it's mostly a joke. Sometimes it's just a favorite line. And what I do is I watch the episode, and as I'm taking notes, when I get to a particularly good line that I think, oh, that'll be great to end the show on, I record that audio, and there you go. And I usually do it for the first one that occurs to me. And for this one, I did one, and then I went, oh, yeah, that's going. And then I hit a second one. I went, no, that one's even better. And then I did it a third time, and I'm like, oh, wait, like, there's a lot here. There's really a lot here. So,
There's a lot of jokes.
as I mentioned, this is the first episode of season eight. It's Too Many Cooks. The original air date was September 17th, 1979, written by Dennis Koenig and directed by Charles S. Dubin. During OR, and even though Colonel Potter seems to be in a sour mood, everyone's spirits are lifted when they meet Private Conway, who gets wheeled in with a simple fractured ankle. Not since it's not the result of a war injury, Conway's just a klutz, it makes Hawkeye's day to treat such a non-violent injury. Colonel Potter doesn't enjoy all the levity, but the rest of them don't care. They find it even funnier when another soldier gets wheeled in, injured when Conway fell on him. Turns out that Conway is a hapless soldier, completely inept with weapons, but he is a superb cook, and he starts preparing meals for the 477th, which thrills everyone. For the first time, the mess tent is SRO. Colonel Potter isn't pleased that Conway is being kept off the line just to prepare food for everyone, and lets everyone know that's what's making him so surly, that his wife Mildred has grown tired of never having him around and is demanding he give up his command and return home. He orders the doctors to send Conway home pronto. Hawkeye tries to get Potter to talk about his problems, but he won't open up. He gets even madder when he discovers the rest of the gang trying to get Conway a transfer off the line. He takes the phone from the general in charge, General Haggerty, and says that if there's anyone going anywhere, it might be him. Right now, the way he's feeling, Potter just wants to quit and go home. Everyone is stunned at this, and Margaret goes to Potter and manages to get him open up and soften a little bit. He's been trying to call Mildred to talk to her, but the lousy phone lines are keeping the call from going through. Later, General Haggerty shows up at the 477th to talk to his old friend Potter directly to find out what's on Potter's mind after that strange phone call. They start to talk, but Haggerty is distracted by the amazingly tasty food served to him. Hawkeye and BJ are eager to see if they can talk Haggerty into transferring Conway off the front lines into the 477th permanently, butter him up. But they are crestfallen when Haggerty says he's going to take Conway with him as his personal chef. I'll be the envy of all the generals in the Far East. Klinger is thrilled, assuming he'll be able to tag along. But Conway has other plans. He wants to go back to his unit and cook for them as a way to make up for all of his klutziness. Haggerty is disappointed, but admires Conway's loyalty and agrees. Klinger quickly dissolves their partnership, not wanting to go to the front. A few days later, Colonel Potter gets a letter from Mildred, who is no longer angry. After speaking to a young soldier who was wounded and cared for at a MASH, Mildred realizes how important what her husband is doing and apologizes for being so tough on him. Everything at the Potter house is back to normal. Okay. As I mentioned, every season, starting season six, every season of MASH has what I call the Angry Potter episode, where Colonel Potter just barks at everybody for two-thirds of the episode until somebody finally gets him to open up. They're not my favorite episodes because yeah. Potter's just such a jerk. And after, like, I don't know, after doing this maybe once or twice, you maybe move on. But no, there's basically one of these every season until the final season of the show. But I appreciate that they got it out of the way, kind of. You know, like, okay,
right
first
out
one,
the gate, right?
Right out yeah. of the gate, let's get it done, it's fine. And then the other sort of structural changes, if you look at the credits have been changed to where it now says also starring Gary Berghoff as Radar, added to the very end. This is the first and only time that this sort of character credit was ever used on the show, and this was kind of a way to sort of give special notice to Gary Berghoff, because originally he was supposed to leave at the end of season seven, and then apparently it was the network, CBS, who wanted to make it a bigger deal and asked MASH to, can you hold off and make it a big two-parter for season eight? So he gets this sort of special credit for just like this handful of episodes. So, okay, Corey, you've been here many times before. Overall thoughts on Too Many Cooks?
Yeah, I'm on the same page as you. The Cranky Potter episodes don't do it for me. I think that I don't, despite the fact that they keep trying, I don't find right. I don't find that a believable aspect of his character. and I never did, ever. Early on, never bought it. So like that aspect of it, I did not love. Overall though, I think I enjoyed this episode quite a bit. Like I was saying, I think that the jokiness of it is really good. The plot is barely there, right? Like if you dig too deep, you're not going to find much. I think it pulled some things that I love and, out, you know, and put them in the forefront. I love the relationship between Colonel Potter and Hot Lips. I really, really like that. I like the sort of the threesome of the folks from the swamp. I like the addition of Winchester. I think I enjoy him a great deal. I think as an actor, he is so underrated. And the performance that he gives in that, like just the fact that he just shows up and is using this mid-Atlantic accent for no reason was, it's not a Boston accent, right? It's just what everybody thought the Boston accent sounded like in movies.
he talks like Katharine Hepburn from the 30s.
That's right.
You know, it's
classic
that kind of thing.
Mid-Atlantic
yeah.
accent, right? Like just doing that kind of almost American, almost British, like somewhere in the middle of the Atlantic, right? Like, and it just, it's, I just think it's beautiful to listen to. Like, I love that he made that choice. That is not relevant to this episode. It's just his character in general. But like, I like that they gave them a little bit of time, but they didn't overwhelm the episode with their antagonism, which can sometimes get a little cumbersome. I liked the fact that it had two guest stars that I was just like, oh, I guess they probably weren't guest stars at that. Well, one of them was. But you know, the other was probably just beginning their career.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed that. But yeah, in general, I think it's a good season opener because it just really, it's fun. You just sort of go along for the ride. It's got a happy ending. It's not going to hit you over the head with, you know, the tragedy in a way that MASH can do. It's not exhausting. Like at the end of it, you're not just like, whoa, wow, that was rough. So I thought it was a good season opener. I thought it was a funny episode. Not much to it. Had some great little moments. Had a couple of just, I thought, fantastic lines. Yeah, good episode.
Yeah, for a season that, there's going to be a couple episodes down the line that are like a 2x4 up the side of the head. They're going to dreams, and Lifetime. Yeah, this one is very, very excited for the Potter storyline. This is very low stakes, and it's a little kind of like the early seasons in that it's Hawkeye and BJ kind of pulling not a scam, but kind of, doing something to make things better for themselves, which is namely the better food. And so obviously, that's pretty low stake. There's no lives on the line or anything like that. And that's fine. It's nice to have that balance. So the episode opens in surgery, and we always see this as I mentioned, Potter's in a surly mood. Hawkeye gets off a good joke, and the nurse that is assisting Potter laughs pretty uproariously, and then Potter says, "Nurse, when you're done laughing, can you give me the clamp?" And she's like, "You didn't ask for a clamp." And he's like, "I don't want to hear any argument, just give me the clamp." And then Margaret steps in and says, "Sir, you didn't ask for the clamp." And who asked you? And I just want to mention, I don't know which nurse it is because she's not credited in the episode who laughs, but spontaneous laughs, hard to do, hard to do without making, and it sounded real, especially when you've probably shot this scene 4 times. But it's I always find people fake laugh is very difficult to do. So credit to that actress for laughing, and she actually like shrugs her shoulders a little, and it looks real that she's feel like she's just hearing that line from Hawkeye for the first time. So like, but again, we see that Potter's already in a pissy mood. Then we meet, as you just mentioned, one of our guest stars, Conway, played by Ed Begley Jr., who I mostly knew from St. Elsewhere when I was growing up. I watched him on that show. He was a doctor on that show. He's been in a million movies. He was in Best in Show, of course. He was
Spinal
in
Tap.
this is Spinal Tap,
The
the
whole
drummer.
Christopher Guest oeuvre
Yeah,
of
he's in The In-Laws. He's in Blue Collar with Richard Pryor. He's in the remake of Cat People. He is the son of the actor Ed Begley Sr., who most people know, if you know him at all at this age. He's one of the 12 Angry Men. He is one of those guys. And he also, I was mentioned, he was also a regular on the show Rollout, which was a sort of not companion show to MASH, but it was a show produced by Gene Reynolds, set in World War II, and it kind of looks like MASH. And it only ran, I think, for 1.5 seasons or something in the early 70s. But it was clearly, if you look, there is a lot of overlap between the guest actors on MASH and the guest actors in Rollout, and vice
That's
versa.
interesting.
Yeah.
Was it on CBS as
I
well?
believe so. There are episodes on YouTube. I don't know why I have never quite had the presence of mind to sit and just check a few of them out. But when I first heard about it, I knew it wasn't a spinoff because I knew MASH had only had the quote unquote one spinoff, really two. But I was like, oh, was Rollout set during the Korean War? And it isn't. It's set during World War II, which I thought was kind of a curious choice. Like, why not make it Korean? Like, why not make the connection even more
Have a MASH
explicit?
cinematic
Yeah,
universe
why
before
not? But,
anybody was doing it,
yeah,
right?
but anyway, Ed Begley is in Rollout, so there you go. So yeah, so he comes in, and it's fun seeing what will become a recognizable face. Ed Begley had been in some stuff, but as you say, he was really starting his career out here, and he's young and fresh faced. And I like how self-effacing he is because he knows he's a klutz. He's not trying to be anything. He talks about he fell into a ditch and whatever. And there's a moment where everyone laughs because when he says, "I fell in a foxhole," and everyone starts laughing. And of course, Margaret is offended, and she's like, "Doctors, all injuries during combat are combat injuries." And she's like, "All right." And then Hawkeye has a curious line where he says, "Why, Margaret? This is a side of you." He says, "Why, Margaret? This is a side of you I've never seen. Not even when the shower curtain fell," which feels like a sort of sideways reference to MASH the movie, because that's the big gag in that movie is they pull the shower curtain up on. Now
That's
they
right.
pulled that gag on the show that we never saw, but nevertheless, like that's the famous gag from that movie. And I think, okay, is that whatever.
Yeah, I didn't pick that up as a reference to that, but that makes perfect sense. Like, By that point, I was already like, my God, the jokes.
Yeah,
You know what
they're
I
just
mean? So it was
flying
like
left and right, you
keeping
know?
up with them was like, yeah, catching references. It was not a thing I did.
Yeah. And so I love that Potter yells at them all to serious up, and they kind of like, okay, or whatever. And then Klinger, and they sort of like, okay, we'll stop with the jokes. And then Klinger comes in with another patient and says, oh, this guy injured when some clown fell on him. So it's like a, but it's like the but a bum. The act, you know, it's like the runner of stuff. I think that's
Yeah,
terrific. And then, of
I
course,
love
that
that.
sparks
Yeah,
the laughter even further.
from Margaret.
Yeah, right. She, because it's funny. Yeah, there's
And what
the way that
was,
Jamie Farr delivers this. Some clown fell on him.
yep. And the what's interesting, like, too, is just to go back to what you were saying a moment ago about the guest actress who did this very convincing laugh, like in that moment. Margaret was the exact, that was such a stage laugh when she laughed. I'm like, you're on stage. There's like, you know, two chairs between you and another person, and you just laughed at them. You know what I mean? It was very theatrical and sort of sudden and out of nowhere. And I don't know if I just caught on to that because, you know, they don't really give her a lot of opportunity to laugh.
No, not a, yeah.
You know, she's they position her as something of a shrew through many of the episodes. I mean, they give her much more to do than that. They give her a lot more depth than just that. I don't want to take that away, but laughing isn't something that she gets to do real often.
Yeah, it's true. She just gets to finally relax a little.
Yep.
So, post-surgery, we see Klinger is on the phone with Radar, and this will be the first of several episodes where we just get these sort of one-offs of Radar in a set all by himself. He's not interacting with anybody else. He's on R&R, and they did this same bit apparently on Three's Company when they were having problems with Suzanne Summers and they wanted to write her out of the show, but they couldn't or something. So
I remember that,
they had
yeah.
several episodes where they just called Chrissy for some reason, and it was sort of like, oh, this other character is in an undisclosed location, and we're just
Yeah.
beaming the scenes in. And so you get the feeling that all of these scenes that Gary Berghoff shot, he probably did them all in an afternoon, right? And they just dropped them in various various times of like, okay, here he's talking to Klinger or whatever. And it's a little awkward, especially since Radar is so pissy.
Yeah,
He really
that was
is.
my takeaway from that scene. I had two takeaways from that scene. The first was, my God, he's on vacation reading comic books. That is a dream. Just a hotel room and comics. Okay, sign me up. But also that whole scene just felt very like I was sort of retrofitting some motivation there. I'm like, maybe he just doesn't want to be away and he feels bad that he is away and he's like angry and he's taking it out, you know, on Klinger. But it just didn't really seem in keeping with his character at
No,
all.
yeah, right.
So what was the story there? Like I, you know, feel free to edit this out if you've already spent time on this, but what was going on? Why was he you know, like on the outs, like what was there a
Well, I think no, he wanted to leave. He just got, if you watch seasons 6 and 7, there's whole episodes where there is no Radar. And they don't, sometimes they'll make an effort to comment on, oh, he's on R&R or blah, blah, blah. And a lot of times they don't. They just don't do it. And all of a sudden, Klinger seems to be the company clerk. And it was because Gary Berghoff simply didn't want to be on the show anymore. He got burnt out on playing this character. And that's understandable because he was like 30 playing a 19-year-old and,
Yeah, 7 years like into
trying to
it, yeah.
develop him. You know, he didn't get a chance to develop the way some of the other characters did, at least in as big of an arc as some of the other characters did. So he just decided he wanted to go. And like I mentioned at the top of the show, originally they were going to write him out at the end of season 7, and then CBS said, "Can you make it a big splashy thing for season 8?" Now, why? I'm sure it's in some MASH tome somewhere, and or I've read it and I've since forgotten about it. Why they didn't open the season with it? And, you know, why have him leave like six shows in. I don't exactly know. It might have been a sweeps thing. Maybe they wanted to have that episode air during sweeps month. And so
Yeah,
it's
that's a
like,
good
well,
point.
okay, if he's going to come back, if we're going to bring him back for season eight, we can't just have him gone for seven shows and bring him back just to let him leave. So they've jerry-rigged this thing where, oh, he's on R&R and Klinger can call him. And when you know that, you're like, oh, okay, I kind of see what this is. It's a
Yeah,
little,
yeah.
it's a strange conceit. It's a very,
Now
very strange.
that sweeps theory is a good one, I think, because if this episode premiered in like late September, November sweeps would have been 6 or 6, 7 weeks after that. So that actually that tracks. That makes perfect sense. It's weak though. Like it's pretty. I remember these episodes being kind of like, okay, let's just, let's send him on his way.
I love when Colonel Potter comes in and yells at Klinger, and then Klinger imitates Potter, and he did Reef my wife yet? I love it when somebody imitates Harry Morgan's kind of weird bray that he's got. It doesn't remotely sound like Harry Morgan, but it's sort of the feeling of Harry Morgan, the feeling of Colonel Potter. It always makes me laugh of just when he does that. It's just like that weird tone that he takes. And then
Klinger,
I,
that,
oh, go ahead.
oh no, I'm sorry. I was going to say that Klinger is an interesting case study for me. I don't like that character, but I love Jamie Farr's portrayal of that character. Like, I think he digs, like I don't, maybe Klinger is just him, right? Like, maybe he's just like, but I mean, I've heard your interview with him. I've heard other interviews with him. He seems like kind of a soft-spoken sort of, relaxed kind of dude. I'm not getting big Klinger vibes from him when you hear him talking in real life. Of course, he's significantly older now than he was then. But I think that his performance is like fully realized in a way that maybe some others aren't. Like it gets a lot of range in almost every episode that he's in. I mean, yeah, he's mostly just comic relief, but they develop his story in little pieces in a way, and I don't know, as much as I don't care for the character, sometimes I think his joke got old pretty quickly, and the fact that they kept going with it for however many years was, it kind of made it funnier. You know what I mean? They just beat the it's like the you probably, I don't know if you've seen this, but in Family Guy, Peter fights a chicken randomly. And
No, I
those
haven't
fight
seen that.
scenes, they drag on. And the joke is, look how much time we're willing to commit to this
Yes, it's
stupid
right.
chicken
It's
fight.
the old comedy precept of that it's funny once, and then you do it three or four more times, it stops being funny, and then you do it nine times. Then it becomes funny
It's
again because
funnier.
of the absurdity of your continually. It's like Sideshow Bob
Commitment to the
stepping on the
bit.
rakes in the
Yes,
scene
that's
where
exactly
he
right.
walks, he steps on 17 rakes, and at number 18, you're laughing hysterically because you're like, "How? Why am I watching this for 2 solid minutes?"
Yeah, but I really actually liked him quite a lot in this episode. He was all over the place doing all kinds of things. His tuxedo bit, like I was just like, wow, his wardrobe is for somebody that's deployed.
Oh, he can, yeah, he's got a Doctor Who like,
Exactly.
TARDIS sort of. He can just pull anything from anywhere. Yeah. I've said this on, so many episodes at this point that he didn't always get a lot of chances to show what he could do, but when he was given them, I think he almost always crushed it. Like
Yeah, I
almost
agree.
always. And then he was not given much of an opportunity outside of MASH at all to do anything of I don't mean to knock the guy, it just is the way his career played out. I just don't think he was ever really got much to dig into outside of MASH, which is a shame because it shows that he was very capable of doing it.
It's really strange, not totally unrelated, but it's a bit of a diversion here, but it is really strange how TV sort of became this trap for some people. It's like you were amazingly, you were on a regular series for 11 years, and after you're done that, like it's hard to remember, but like George Clooney was an aberration. He wasn't common. People didn't jump from TV to cinematic superstardom,
Oh
right?
yeah, it
Back
was
in
a
the
real
day,
risk. Sure,
it
yeah,
was a
but
real
yeah.
risk. And it, you know, like if you were on a successful TV series where you played a beloved character for 11 years, what you were going to get after that was a guest star, you know, a guest appearance on Murder, She Wrote, and some, you know, Circus of the Stars. Like maybe you'll show up on a roast or something. You know, like it was just like it was weird. It's strange to me because you know you watch shows from the 70s and the 80s, and you see all these actors, and you think, wow, was this, you know. This person is kind of a big deal now. Were they a big deal then? And then you go back and you look at their IMDb credits and you're just like, oh, no, they weren't. Or yeah, they were. How did they show up on this TV episode?
If you think that the whole joke of Klinger that he was cross-dressing to get out of the army, if you felt that that ran too long, I doubt. I don't know why I'm stuttering. I'm assuming you never watched Aftermath. Did you ever see any of those episodes?
I saw them when I was younger, and I remember he looked like Bing Crosby in them, and
Because
I.
what they do on that show is in the first season, I know we're getting far, we've only gotten 5 minutes into this episode, but they're in that show, he's the lead, ostensibly. He really is the lead. And they're doing a kind of best years of our lives thing about the struggles of returning veterans. And I actually thought the show was terrific. And then ratings started to fall, and in season two, they started making him wear dresses again. And
No,
you're just
really?
like, yeah, they contrive this reason as to why he's got to, like, he's on the run from the cops, so he's got to hide, and they make him start doing the dressing in women's clothes again. And you're just like,
Oh.
oh no, you know, like no,
Yeah, that's a
all the, you
shame.
know, so oh, yeah, just but anyway, I do like Radar's line where he's giving Klinger some advice about who to call to try and find Mildred, and then
Oh,
he
I love
mentions
that. Yeah, that.
one of the neighbors, and he's like, he mentions somebody, and he says, "Let the phone ring. She drinks."
She
Which,
drinks. I love that joke. That's one of the jokes I wrote down verbatim on my notes. I was like, let the phone ring. She
Muriel
drinks.
Barlow, right? Yeah, Muriel Barlow.
Yeah.
Let the phone ring. I like that they're kind of accepting that. It's like, yeah, she drinks. You're just gonna have to deal with the fact that she's slightly sloshed when you're
That's
trying to
so
get a hold
funny.
of her. I think that's terrific. So there's that scene, and then they cut to the next. We see Radar just sitting all alone in his hotel. We can even hear a party going on in the next room, but he's not invited to, and he's there by himself. So then the next day, we're in the mess tent, and Klinger is chowing down on food. Hawkeye and BJ come in to yell at him about something. I noticed that Mike Farrell, very tan in this episode. He must have spent some time on vacation. He is very, very tan. And then they start noticing that the food that Klinger is eating smells good. And
Yeah.
that's something they don't normally deal with. And then Klinger says, try it. And BJ takes a bite and goes, oh my God, this is so good. And they said, what is it? And it's spam parmesan. And which is gross because spam is to me absolutely disgusting. But nevertheless, beggars can't be choosers, and they are chowing down on it with forks. And there's this great bit of physical comedy where Hawkeye is on one side of Klinger, BJ's on the other, and they are sliding the plate back and forth from each other to grab a bite. And like they're just, it's very, very Abbott and Costello in a way of just constantly grabbing bites. And at one point, like, Hawkeye's ready to like stick his fork down, and he can't because the plate's already been slid away from him by BJ. So I like all that stuff.
That whole sequence was really, really funny.
So they introduced that who is the person that made all this food, and it's Private Conway, and he's got his crutch, and he talks about, I told them I was a cook. I told the personnel people I was a cook. They made me a rifleman. And there's a great line where BJ says something to the effect of, yeah, you should have lied. I was a plumber. Look where they put me, which
Yeah, I like that. Yeah,
great.
none of his patients ever spring leaks.
Yeah, that's great stuff. So then Winchester arrives, and He is, of course, driven entirely by his olfactory senses because he's like, what? And then he says, that's definitely Parmesan I smell. And then he says, the meat is a mystery. And of course it is, because the Winchesters have never gone near spam. He has
Spam.
no
Yeah,
idea
that's
what that
right.
is. So I
I
love that
love
idea
that.
that he has no clue what spam smells like, because of course his family has
Yep.
never ever partaken in it. I think that's great.
It's amazing.
So Winchester, of course, says, he says, sir, if this was a true civilized nation, you would be king. He's eating with his hands. He's so enraptured by this food. And then Klinger says, what could we do to keep him here? And of course, Hawkeye initially is sort of like, oh, we gotta follow rules. And he says, he can only stay until his leg is healed. And then there's a pause. Then we'll break the other one, which.
Yep. That's the other joke that I have written down verbatim on my. I loved that. I love that whole setup and punchline. I thought that was
Yeah.
really, really well done.
Right. And I'm like, that's like five great lines in one scene, in one episode. I was like, all right, good, good, good. So we cut to presumably not the next day, but at least a couple of days, because clearly word has gotten out that the mess tent actually has good food now. BJ and Hawkeye are getting ready to go over there, and they're trying to warn Winchester because he's not ready. He's still just getting back from his shower, and they're like, you're gonna run, they're gonna run out of food, you're gonna run out of space. And Winchester's, like, I am show up when I am appropriately groomed, and he does not seem to be taking any particular hurry. And you're like, oh, okay, that's interesting. Why is that? And then we cut to the mess tent, and we see that now Klinger is in the tux, as you mentioned. He's become a full-on maitre d', and somehow the mess tent has now become a restaurant. I don't know why anyone listens to Klinger. Like, he's just a corporal. He doesn't have any power over it. But somehow there's this now line of people have to get the mess tent. And this is where the show has a little bit of rubber band reality, because you're like, well, this is very cartoony all of a sudden. But you just go with it because it's funny.
And I think that those moments are more prevalent in the later seasons, where they just kind of lean into sort of sitcom tomfoolery. And you see that, I think you see that a lot with many shows, like many comedy shows, as they age, they just sort of start collecting tropes and throwing them together, and putting silly things in. Like, yeah, I like that rubber band reality, things that would never really happen. And in a show as grounded as MASH, it kind of jumps out at you a little bit. But I think that those sort of things are a little more persistent in the later half of the series.
Yeah, I think that's true. So Hawkeye and BJ can't get a table, and then Winchester shows up and walks right in, because of course he has greased the palm of the maitre d', which
With
is, of course,
Mrs. Winchester du jour.
that's another line I had. Mrs. Winchester
Loved
du
that.
jour. In
I
this
was like,
case,
are
it's
you
Nurse
kidding
Kelly.
me? Yep.
But I love that, Mrs. Winchester du jour. That's
Mm
fantastic. I would love to know how did Kelly get together with Winchester? How did that work? That's just a great gag. And then of course, Klinger suggests, well, if you want VIP treatment, there are ways. And he puts his palm out to get a tip, and that Hawkeye just simply grabs Klinger's palm and bends it up. And they force their way onto it. And there's a table at a barrel, like an oil barrel. And I like that there's a basket with fresh rolls. And like,
Rolls.
what? Where did that go? If those were available already, why are they, like, what's going on? Again, you're just like, this makes no sense in the reality of the show. But okay, fine. It's and then Margaret and Father Mulcahy show up, and they all sit down together, and then a grumpy Colonel Potter arrives, and they talk about he says, I'm not hungry, and they says a good meal might make you feel better, and he says, why is everybody poking their nose in my stomach? And he then gets mad about this thing with Conway. Why is he still here? He ought to be recuperating down in Seoul like everybody else. And BJ says, well, he's not really a soldier. He's a cook. He doesn't belong there. And Potter's not having it. And he says, look, you stuffed your face, but the game's over. And he just is in no mood for any of this stuff. And he even barks at Margaret, which very rare, but he does. And then he finally reveals what the problem is, where he whips out this letter and he says, and he waves, "That's from my wife. She says she's nagging me via airmail to come home. My whole marriage might be fading into the sunset, but I'm still here doing my job so Conway can do the same." And he storms off. So obviously things are not going really well with Colonel Potter. And that's our act break. That's the end of the first part of the show.
So this, the Colonel Potter subplot is not one of my favorites in MASH history. I thought, you know, the that's when he waves the letter around.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
And I was just like, I don't understand how he went from being so mind your own beeswax to waving an actual letter from his wife where she's like, "You need to come home or I'm leaving you." Like, I was like, that was an escalation in behavior that I was not expecting. But it propels the episode, right? Like you say, it's the act break. It propels you. It gets you ready for the next part of it where they bring it home.
Yeah, it's just a personal thing. I don't like the characters being nasty to one another. These are these people. These are characters I love. These are sort of my TV family. And when they're arguing, it's just kind of like, well, I get it, but I don't want to, you know, I'm not enjoying it. It's kind of like a movie where the characters for some reason are pitted against each other. And you're always like, well, I know we're just marking time until they fix that. It's okay to do it every so often. But once a season, it just feels a little lazy that you're like, okay, all right. You know, like, stop with having Potter bark at everybody. But okay. So we come back and we're in Potter's office and he has an angry phone call. And then Hawkeye shows up and tries to talk him down. Potter's not having it. Then he comes out and sees that everyone else is talking to some muckety muck in terms of getting Conway reassigned. And he initially turns, first of all, he's like, you know, I don't like that you're doing that. The adjutant general's office, that's right. And he's like, you know, he's like, I told you not to do this, but you're doing it anyway. And then he turns and he says something along the lines of, you thought you'd pull the old badger routine, referring to Hawkeye keeping me busy while you guys are out here, which means he's sort of saying Hawkeye was lying to me the whole time.
That's right. He wasn't being genuine in his concern. Yeah.
Which is really nasty. And then even Margaret says, Pierce didn't know anything about this. And then
his defense.
Yeah. And we see that Hawkeye is genuinely offended, which he should be, because it's like, hey, right, now come on. You know me better than that. That's so.
Yeah. It's just a lot of him. Well, like, you know, like we established earlier, most of these cranky Potter episodes are him acting out of character.
Yeah. Although he does get a good line here where he gets the phone away from Winchester, talks to the adjutant general, and there's this pause and he goes, "I know that, but he's a good doctor."
I loved that. I literally howled at that line. I was like, oh, that's amazing. So you said the word lazy a minute ago, and I think that that's a really good descriptor for this episode. I think it's pretty lazy overall, but they're so good at writing the humor and the dialogue and just sort of like, you know, it almost doesn't matter that it's lazy. You know what I mean? Like it almost isn't, it doesn't matter because it's still really funny and it delivers, you know, despite the fact that it's got this wire thin plot that the actions of the characters, some of the characters are not in keeping with their established behaviors. That scene where Potter yells at Hot Lips was one of those ones for me. Cause like, I have always loved that relationship. Yeah. That's a great relationship. And as I've aged and sort of watched Houlihan from a different perspective, not from the, I just have an unabiding crush on you. And also I think you're kind of mean, which was basically my preteen and teen years. It was just like, but now where you see that they were really maybe not very good at writing somebody who is deeply, deeply empathic, right? Which is really what her vibe is. Like that's what she's trying. That's what she is. That's why she's, why she is the way she is. I think maybe they weren't necessarily great at pulling that to the forefront with her all the time, but she does. The actor absolutely pulls that out about that character, and it's just because you have. Even the cranky Potter stuff, it's not believable from the established personality, but he's really good at it, right? Like, Hairmore's really good at that role. And, whether you buy it from a historical perspective or not, he delivers what he needs to deliver. And when it needs to be funny, it's funny. And when it needs to be terse, it's terse. And when it needs to be, heartfelt, it's heartfelt. And you're just like, sort of at the end of it, you're just like, yeah, okay, that wasn't, they weren't trying to get a Peabody with this episode, but they made me laugh, and all the characters, all the actors delivered great performances. You really can't ask for much more than that.
Yeah, and Potter as a character is so warm, so avuncular that when he's yelling at you, it's doubly terrifying because it's like this guy that's so kind of sweet. And, I've said this in like every episode he's been on of the show since is like, this is the guy, this is your boss. This is like your dream boss is this guy. He's supportive. He knows what he's doing, though. Like it's just, this is the exact kind of boss you would want. And so when he's wagging his finger at you and he's And his face is red. You're like, oh my God, I really screwed up here. This is really, really bad. So he storms off, and the doctors try and say, well, what are we going to do? We should go talk to him. He's, and Winchester's like, we need to appeal to his sense of reason. And it's Margaret who's like, you guys, he's a grown man. He'll handle it himself. And then she says, leave him alone if he doesn't want to talk, which of course means we cut right to Potter in his tent saying, leave me alone. I don't want to talk. And in a reverse shot, we see Margaret coming in the mirror and we see that she is not taking her own advice. And as you mentioned, this scene is terrific. This is really sweet. I've always loved this relationship. This was a found relationship. This was not anything that they had written for the show. They intended to for the show that Margaret and Potter would become this father-daughter relationship, but it was the relationship that Harry Morgan and Loretta Swit, unfortunately now both of them gone, had that they wrote to this. And so every
Is
so
that
often,
so?
what?
I didn't know that. I didn't know
Oh.
that this wasn't intentional, that the actors put this into the characters, and then it just sort of became a thing.
The writers wrote to it, apparently, that
Yeah,
it
wow,
was,
that's awesome.
they did not write it as, oh, Potter will become the father figure for Margaret. It was, they saw the relationship that Loretta and Harry Morgan had, and they wrote to that. And
Oh my
it
God, I love
yeah.
that.
And it's great. And so they every time they would do this, I loved it because it's Margaret is able to cut through to him in a way that the doctors cannot. And I love that dynamic. I loved it from, I mean, it goes, they stretch it to the absolute end of her final scene. The final scene we ever get of Margaret Houlihan is her in the Jeep as the doctors are saying goodbye. And what does Colonel Potter do? He kisses her on the forehead like a father would. So, I mean, they played to that. And so it's just a terrific scene. And of course, as we mentioned, and I did a special episode of MASHcast over the summer about it. We've since lost Loretta Swit. And it makes me sadder again to watch these episodes and see her again, knowing that she's not here. But she's just terrific. Her and Harry Morgan have this wonderful dynamic that is. It's writing and it's acting, but it's also real. And she talks about how she dealt with Donald, and even though that's divorce, they're divorced, she still talks about the letters that she would write him and how angry she would getting, and she's trying to see it from Mildred's point of view, which is just great. So it's a wonderful scene, and I'm really glad. For as much as I'm knocking the show and saying, oh, this is yet another angry Potter show, I'm glad that they don't resolve it in a silly way or anything, that they just do a heart to heart. Margaret walks in, cuts through all the BS, and gets to him, and that gets him to sort of calm down. It's a terrific resolution. If you're going to do the story, great resolution to him.
Yeah, I agree. I agree entirely. Yeah, that was like, to me, that was, I almost feel as though that scene was written and then they just put everything else around it. Like in the writer's room, like they're like, I have this amazing idea for an incredible problem for Colonel Potter to be having and how Margaret can sort of save the day. And they wrote that scene and then they're like, all right, now how do we prop this up? 'Cause it was, yeah, I think arguably the best performed scene in the episode, and it, you know, and really, really well written, very heartfelt.
So later on that night, we see General Hagerty, who is the adjutant general who they were just talking to on the phone, shows up. That is played by longtime character actor John Randolph. He's born in 1915. He passed away in 2004. Was in a million things, a million TV
Everything.
shows, a million movies. Just a few of his amazing credits: Heaven Can Wait with Warren Beatty, Serpico with Al
Serpico.
Pacino. He's in two of the original The Planet of the Apes movies, Escape and Conquest of the Planet of the Apes. He's in a terrific movie with Rock Hudson called Seconds, and then a more obscure film with Anthony Perkins and Tuesday Weld called Pretty Poison, which
Yes, yeah.
is. Have you seen Pretty Poison?
Years ago, I don't remember anything about it, but I think that was a movie that my mom had rented or something on VHS, and I can remember seeing like the VHS cover where maybe even, no, it wouldn't have been a video disc, but I remember having awareness of it. But I was really saying more, yeah, in that I had read that he was in that as well.
It's a great movie, and again, it's not as quite famous as some other ones, but if you ever, I think it's on Blu-ray at this point. If you ever have a chance to watch it, it's not anything that you would sort of expect from maybe from the title and how it unfolds, and then it moves on. You're like, oh my God, this movie's crazy. So he's just, again, it was in a million things and just some of those credits. And so he shows up, he walks to the mess, and he's of course a little shocked as to why Klinger is wearing a tuxedo. And then he sits down with Colonel Potter, who is, of course, has already sort of relaxed now. You know, he's sitting at breaking bread, literally, with the doctors. And he wants to know, what the hell was that phone call that I had with you where you barked at me? And, you know, he says something like, if that was terse, I would hate to see testy. And Potter doesn't really want to get into it, even though they're old friends. And Hagerty's like, no, come on. And he kind of pulls a Margaret where he's like, I know you too well. Cut the crap. What's going on? And then so
We've
finally,
been buddies since basic training, I think he said, yeah.
And so Potter finally does lighten up a little, and then he initially says, "Hey, look, let's go on some R&R here. You know, let's go have a take a go on a vacation." And then he tastes the food, and then immediately we go back to our A plot where he gets distracted by this food, and he's like, "Who made this food?" And poor Potter is like, "Wait, I thought you were here for me." And but of course, Hagerty is now busy worrying about the food, and he has this bit where he says, "Oh, this is ridiculous. You are a rifleman. This is ridiculous. What do you, a man, cooks this well?" And then he has this line. He says, "Well, first, Hawkeye and BJ are playing dumb." Like, they don't know what can be done. They're like, we're just a bunch of silly doctors. What can be done? And he says, I know what we'll do. We'll change his MOS. And they all go, change his MOS. And BJ's like, can you really do that? I think he's playing like he's an idiot. And I had to look up MOS because I didn't know what that meant. And I like the fact that they don't tell you what it is. You'd have to know from context. And that stands for military occupational specialty. So of course it's basically your classification. You're a rifleman, you're a this, you're a doctor, you're a corpsman, whatever. But I kind of like that they don't do that. They just have to, you know, that's how these people would talk. They would just use the acronym. And so he says, I want you to be my private chef. And Klinger is like, well, where he goes, I go. And I kind of like the idea that Klinger makes plans without asking anybody. Like, I get this sense that Conway is in on this at all. But that's Klinger always kind of attaching himself like a barnacle to some other better situation that he could do.
He
And,
just wants to get out, man, by any means necessary.
But I just love that he doesn't seem to run it by anybody. Like he doesn't sit Conway down and say, hey, maybe we can do this together. Conway seems to be like, what? Like, what are you talking about? And
Yeah,
then
he's come a
Conway,
long way from holding people hostage with a
yeah,
hand grenade,
seriously. Yeah, really. So then Conway says, sir, to be honest, I'd really love to go back on the line and cook for my pals because it's the least. And Hawkeye says that's the least he can do after tripping over them and falling on them and stuff like that. And of course, that, I mean, Klinger immediately detaches himself because he has no interest in
Like,
going
nope.
up to the line. Nope, nope, nope. And he just literally like exits the frame at that point. And then it ends on a nice little bumper where he's like, Randolph, excuse me, Haggerty says, I only got one. He has the Randolph, John Randolph had this wonderful, ever so slight kind of lisp to his voice. There's this weird kind of slight, I don't know. I maybe I'm not even not lisp, but he has a very particular way of speaking. And he says, I just got one question for you. Do you deliver? He is the kind of thing. And that's kind of our bumper to get out of the scene that he's going to keep asking for Conway to deliver food. Now, you got to wonder, how can Conway cook this well on the line? Because he has way less ingredients at his disposal, I would guess, on the line.
I have no idea. That whole thing was a hook for me, 'cause of course I used to, be a professional chef,
That's
so
right.
like it, it was interesting, the spam parmesan of it all was amusing, because that sounds awful, but I guess compared to what they'd been eating was good. But I found that it was pretty evident that whoever wrote like that wrote the food names for things, like, did not have any culinary background, because some of the things that they, but I wish I'd written them down, but a couple of the things that they mentioned were not possible. Like, it's like, no, that's not, you couldn't do that with those ingredients. But then when he's like, I want to go back to the front line, it's like that, I think what they wanted to give him was a sacrifice, so it didn't seem like he was being belligerent about his military service, right? Like, he didn't, and I think that that was, that was part of the sacrifice of just like giving up this cushy gig with a general and going back to support the guys who he had to leave because he tripped and fell on top of them.
Yeah, Conway's a good guy. He's a good guy. So, and they mentioned in the bumper scene, which is following the scene, is where he says, "We loved Conway's duck à l'orange, made with no duck and no l'orange." So
No orange,
whatever, however he was constructing something, he's able to make pretty decent stuff. I mean, obviously, it's a very low bar considering the sludge that they get to eat normally.
I just in my head, I'm sitting there thinking he's just messing with them, like he's making something that's going to be tasty, and he's just throwing a restaurant sounding name on it because he misses that work. Like, I'm filling in some blanks there for him, but like, I wasn't, I just liked everybody's response to it. Did you mention that John Randolph was also in All the President's Men, King Kong, and Prizzi's Honor?
Oh my good, I didn't think about that, right? Wait, I how did I why did I leave out All the President's Men? I love that movie, but yes.
Like, he, I literally,
Amazing
when I
career.
saw him walk on the screen, I was just like, no, there's no way. Like, what? Like, that's what I was saying earlier about how TV actors and film actors were not always, in the same atmosphere, like, and like the thought that, because this, it wasn't like Ed Begley Jr., where he became a big deal later, right? He, and Ed Begley Jr., I think, always has always been more, maybe I'm wrong, but I think he's always been more of a TV actor than a film actor.
Yeah, I think most people probably think of him from TV
Right,
rather than
Arrested
movies.
Development, Saint Elsewhere, like, like, he's all over the place, right? And he's genuinely very, very funny. But John Randolph, like, 79, so he's just a few years from having done All the President's Men. And sir, like, big movies, big deals, and he's like, I'm gonna play a character for 4 minutes on MASH, and we're gonna give him a random backstory, and I don't even, like, we've never seen him before, right?
No, yeah, this is yet another old friend of Potter's who
Right.
we've never heard about and we will never see again.
That was always interesting to me how they would sort of build out his backstory just by bringing other people. Like, I mean, he rode with Teddy Roosevelt. So it's like
Right.
anytime they would bring on other people, you're just like, wow, this really grounds this in like almost ancient history, you know? And it was really funny. I liked that. But I was just stunned when I saw him walk on the screen. I'm like, I was like, this must have been before, he was Clark Griswold's dad, right? Like,
Oh yeah, right. Then he does that. Like this, that's God, that's 10, 15 years after this. So yeah.
So I'm just like, he's a big deal. Like, I know he's a big deal. And I thought he was a big deal at the time. And then when I checked IMDb, he was. And yet he did a moment's, role on MASH. And I don't think a lot of other actors would have done that.
Yeah, I mean, I think first of all, I think MASH was at this point, MASH was massively popular.
It
So
was
I
a
mean
big
that,
deal, right?
that's not a, that means something a little more than maybe you're some sitcom that's like 85th and whatever. But I
That's
mean,
right.
MASH was
Well,
able to
Beverly
get,
Hillbillies, yeah.
yeah, I mean, MASH was able to get big guest star. I mean, again, we're getting off topic a little bit, but like season four, Ned Beatty shows up for
Yeah.
basically two scenes in or three scenes in a MASH episode, and that's Ned Beatty. Right off of Deliverance and Network. I mean,
And just
giant
before Heaven Can
movies.
Wait with John Randall.
Yeah, right. Heaven Can Wait. I mean, giant movies. Giant movie. And here's Ned Beatty, So yeah, I mean it's when you're a working actor, you're like, sure, I'll do it. So yeah, John Randolph, one of the classic those guys. Just could flip between TV and movies, just back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And it never seemed to make, he was never a movie star, never a TV star, but good Lord, he's got how many credits? Hundreds of credits. So yeah, just a absolutely fantastic career, and he's great here. So then we come back, and the everyone is drowning their sorrows in the mess in the O Club because Conway is gone, and they've gone back to the bad food.
They got the pretzels.
They got the pretzels. Potter brings a letter from Mildred, and he asks Margaret to read it, and she writes this very heartfelt letter saying, I heard from this boy who got patched up in a MASH unit, and I like to think that you were the one that did it. And I understood in that moment that what you do is so important, how meaningful it is, and it doesn't leave a dry eye in the house. Everyone, Margaret starts to tear up reading it, and we see Potter's doing his best to remain stoic, and then they have this great laugh line. Where they talk about that Hawkeye jokes about marrying Mildred, and of course Midget goes, nah, then she'd be Mildred Pierce, which
Mildred
is
Pierce.
this is great. And again, what's well, one of those jokes that when I was eight, I didn't understand that joke. I knew it was a joke. I didn't know what Mildred Pierce was. Now I know what it is. It's an old, classic movie. But back then I could just get from the context, like, oh, okay, obviously Mildred Pierce is a thing. And it's found humor because obviously those names are already set. Mildred is already Mildred, and Benjamin Pierce is Benjamin Pierce. So if this was Dennis Koenig who wrote the episode or somebody else on staff, but good job finding that joke there, right? Just found comedy. You're like, wait, those two names. Oh, that's a joke we could throw in. So
That's like a
good
great
guy.
way to describe it as found comedy, because when I was listening to it, I was thinking, that feels like that feels like something that he just said on the fly. Like that felt so perfect that it almost felt like improv.
And
Like that
that's
he
the best writing and performance is that it seems that way.
No, but it makes perfect sense. Like somebody had been thinking about that joke for a really long time. They had to have been, because it seemed so perfect at the time.
Yep. So they talk about sending Mildred flowers, and they ask Klinger to do it, and he starts dropping all these names of all the neighbors, Muriel Barlow, and all the one that drinks. And Potter says, I'll just grow them, it'll be faster. And
It'll be faster.
that's the end of our act two. So then we come back, and everyone is complaining about the food, and Potter says something about they should serve these meatballs with a ping pong paddle and stuff like that. And
That's a good line.
yeah. And then Klinger shows up, with something that smells pretty good, and he hands it off to the doctors, and they eat it, and they're like, "Wow, this is really pretty good. Is this a present from Conway?" And he Klinger says something to the effect of, "It's his recipe, but I made it myself." And he says, "What do you call this?" And Klinger says, "Goat a la king," and that makes everyone horrified, and they looks like BJ looks like he's about to throw up. And that's the end of the episode. Now, I'll tell you, even as a child, long before my vegetarian days, I never liked that joke because
No.
I was a sensitive little boy and I was like, I felt bad for that goat. You know, I was like, oh, that's okay. Like I never liked that's the end of the episode is like, we killed a goat. Wah, wah. I was like, at
Yeah.
least the doctors are horrified at it, but yeah.
I sort of went at it from another tack, thinking there are people from like Jamaica and India and the Middle East not understanding why that's funny.
I didn't even
You
thought
know what
about
I
that, but you're
mean?
right, yeah.
Like lots of cultures eat goat.
Sure.
Lebanese people maybe, potentially, I don't know. But lots of cultures eat goat. And when they made that joke, everybody's like, "Ooh, it's goat." You know, it was just one of those like old jokes about how something is different and therefore it's gross. And there's a lot of those in lesser sitcoms. There is not, you know, you don't really get a lot of those in MASH, or at least I've never noticed them, but that one sort of stuck out at me. I was like, wait a second, is this like, what's this joke? I can't fully wrap my brain around it. And I thought it was kind of a, you know, I thought it was like, okay, well, we need a scene to end the show. Let's just do this. Just do the goat joke.
I mean, there is no animal that they would have come up with that would have been acceptable for me to laugh at, but goats are just so
No, of
sweet and
course.
you
They're very
know, they're
sweet.
just so gentle that I'm like, oh, okay. All right,
Yeah.
whatever. At least my hero BJ looks the most disgusted. Mike Farrell looks like he's literally about to retch. Just like, okay, that's fine. So, okay, not a great end of the episode, but nevertheless, a still very, very funny episode. And I didn't even mention all the jokes, including my favorite one, but I want to ask you, what is your favorite line or joke from the episode?
Oh boy, I think it was, we discussed it earlier. It was just that cutaway. I know, but he's a good doctor. I love that they make you work for that joke.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like you have to go back and you have to write the setup in your own head.
Yes, I
And
love
to
jokes like
me,
that.
I love that, right? Like because it pays. Your investment in the characters in the show pays off with a joke like that, as opposed to like, you know, one that's just like a setup punchline, you know, standard joke anatomy.
Absolutely. Oh, I love jokes that you have to piece together yourself. I just feel that's so much more rewarding intellectually that you've done it yourself. So yeah, I mean, 'cause you're imagining, yeah, that guy's probably like, who the hell am I talking to? You
Who
know?
is that pompous
Yeah, who
blowhard,
is
you
that
know,
pompous
like
blowhard who has this weird accent? And I love that Potter's like, I know that, but he's a good doctor. It's a great line. My favorite joke is actually when Hawkeye and BJ show up to the mess tent for the first time and Klinger says he and Conway are gonna open a restaurant together back home, and he mentions how Toledo is crying out for another 4-star
For
restaurant.
the
To which
four-star
BJ
restaurant.
replies, "Yeah, the other one closed when all the pin boys quit." Which
Oh, so good.
I
So
think
good.
that's
But
such
they
a
get
great
so
line.
many digs on Toledo in this show, man.
When all the pin boys quit, that's such a
I grew
great
up with
line.
such a bias against Toledo for no reason other than they slag it off constantly on this show.
Oh, I love that joke so much. It's just the idea that in Toledo, a 4-star restaurant is where they're bowling. That's just fantastic. So it's a good joke. I don't know if that's, again, if that's the work of Dennis Kettig or someone else on staff that inserted it, but great, great, great joke. Very, very funny. So overall, you know, some definitely kind of parts of the episode, but overall, very funny. And not a bad way to open up. Just one that's a laugh getter, and they'll get very serious very soon. In fact, the very next episode is kind of, it's funny, but it has a much more serious plot line. This is just low stakes. Will the doctors have good food to eat or not? Bang, 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 joke, joke, joke. Great. Great way to open the season.
Yeah, no, it definitely it felt a little Frankenstein, right? Like it felt a little cobbled together from maybe some ideas they had, and it all didn't it didn't you know, it wasn't one of the greats by any stretch of the imagination. But if you wanted to show people this episode, right, at the beginning of a season and hope they will come back for more because you amused and entertained them, I think this episode does it for sure. And if nothing else, the scene where Margaret is reading Potter's wife's Mildred's letter, and they do all these really weird slow close-ups on their faces, and they just really focus on Colonel Potter's eyebrows, which are wild looking. Like that's like that's a it's not meant to be funny. It's not played for laughs, but it's kind of funny when you look at it. It's just like, huh, like it's one of those episodes where it kind of lays out most of what the show does, but in a way that's a little more inviting than perhaps challenging.
All right. Well, Corey, thank you for coming back, man. It's been too long since you've been on the show. We got to, luckily, in case, well, nobody listening to this is going to know the ins and outs of this, but of course, Corey and I used to both live in New Jersey, and that's how we met, is that we worked together at the same bookstore. And then in the intervening years, you moved from New Jersey back to Maine, and I moved from New Jersey down to Florida. So we have put as much space between ourselves as
It's
humanly
true.
possible. Nevertheless, we did get together. You and your wife and your son came down to visit, which was absolutely fantastic. We had a great time getting to see you again. So, but
Same.
it's so great being able to have you back on the show. It's always fun to have you on one of my podcasts, my friend.
Yeah, 100%. I love it. It's a good time, and it gives me an opportunity to watch a show that I love a great deal.
Thank you all for listening. Thank you for coming back. Apologize again, as always, at the giant long wait between these seasons, but just sort of the way life works out. You can find all the back episodes on our website, findwaterpodcast.com. Mashcast is no longer on X or anything like that. No, I'm not on there at all anymore. All of my stuff is over on Blue Sky under Rob Kelly Creative. So if you want to follow me on there, you can go do that. If you want to support the Fine Water Podcast Network, just go to patreon.com/FWPodcast, and there you can unlock various rewards, one of which is doing name checked on a show of your choice. So, as I mentioned just a moment ago, I'm recording these early episodes kind of in a void. Nobody's going to get a chance to hear these. So I'm sure that once season 8 is rolling and people are listening to the episodes, some people will come back to the Patreon. And so if you end up doing that, or I have somehow missed your name in the roll call of the people who are still patrons, please let me know and I will add you to the list. For anyone who's ever used Patreon, they do not make it easy to find the names of people that you're looking for under certain rewards here. So I did my best. So anyway, big salute to Dennis Bailey, Daryl Clark, James K, Michael Kelly, David Mann, Matt McLean, Lisa P, Brady Palmer, Joe Perino, Stan Peel, Michael Porter, Nicholas Prom, Seven Man Shike, Britt Schramm, Billy Shulman, and Mike Thomas. Thanks so much for the continued support of the network and of Mashcast. I really appreciate it. So that is it, everybody. We will see you next week. And until then, that is all.
Sherman, you look as tired as I feel. Why don't I finagle us a little R&R in Tokyo? Huh? Paint the town red, white, and blue like in the old days.
Nah, I'd be crying in my sake.
Ah, come on, it'd be a ball. We'll take the USO guy along for laughs.